Are you ready? Are we ready to start, Pam, or do you need anything more? Okay, then Marshall can call us to order then.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Smith, Judge Ross, Judge Connolly, the Honorable Tracy M. Smith presiding.
Good morning, Council. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We have one case on our oral calendar this morning, and that is Motor Voters Alliance. Excuse me, Minnesota. I knew I would do that. I kept saying it's from doing my taxes when I see like DMV. I just want to use the word motor. It's Minnesota Voters Alliance versus County of Olmsted et al. We have 30 minutes, or each side has 30 minutes for their primary arguments. Counsel for appellant, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. 15 minutes each. What am I saying? I'm going to begin again. I've been doing moot courts, and I think I'm giving wrong information from the moot courts. I'm going to start again. On this case, primary arguments, 15 minutes each side. Okay, 5 minutes rebuttal for counsel for appellant if they choose to use it. And for the respondents, I understand we are seeing now counsel for Ramsey County, for Olmsted County, and for the City of Duluth. But I understand that counsel for Ramsey County, Robert Roche, is going to be doing the argument. We have counsel here for the other respondents in the event that any of us has questions. So with all of that said, each of you who is speaking, including if we ask questions of other counsel, will identify themselves and the party they represent for the record. We have an oral record, audio record of this that will be kept. Okay, so with that, we are ready to proceed, and we will begin with counsel for appellant. If you could start, state your name, party you represent. We have you still on mute, Mr. Cardle, if you want to get it started. Everyone else should remain muted. It looks like everyone else.
Okay. May it please the court, the only thing you missed when I was on mute was apologizing for the technical difficulties on my end. So anyway, now you can hear me. I represent the Minnesota Voters Alliance and the Republican Party of Minnesota and individuals as the appellants. And the lawsuit here is about the absentee ballot boards and how they've been handled by the counties and cities here, that is Ramsey County, Olmsted County, and the City of Duluth. And the appeals have been consolidated. And principally what happened below was that there was a petition for writ of mandamus to require a following the statutes. My client's particular concern is that the appointment of election judges of persons who meet the statutory qualifications for election judges, and to the extent deputy county auditors and deputy city clerks are appointed, that they be bona fide deputies. So under the statutes, which we'll discuss, the county has, there's a statute regarding county deputy auditors that requires the deputy county auditors to serve in all the functions that the county auditor would. And we believe a similar standard should be applied with respect to the cities. So as the court knows, the mandate of section Minnesota Statutes 203B.121 subdivision 1A begins with the idea that election judges are appointed to be absentee ballot board members. Now we concede there's an allowance for county auditors and county deputy auditors and city deputy auditors, but they must be bona fide. They can't be appointed in such a way that they would replace election judges who are drawn from the party lists. And that's
so let me interrupt you, if I may, Mr. Cardle, for some questions. So are you arguing in this appeal that election judges need to be exhausted before the governmental entity turns to the deputy auditors or clerks?
I think that's a great question. I'll answer it directly. No, in the sense of bona fide deputy county auditors and deputy city clerks can be appointed. Now, for example,
okay, so no, I'm just to be clear, I don't see you arguing in your brief whether first election judges need to be exhausted. And so when you say no, are you saying I'm not making that argument that they need to be exhausted before one turns to the deputies? Or are you saying there needs to be exhaustion of election judges first? Are you making that argument?
No. The argument I'm making is that, look, for example, with respect to the counties, there is a bona fide deputy county auditor, and the deputy county auditor serves in all the functions the county auditor does. And the critical thing, Judge Smith, I think, is the idea that they serve in all the functions. So what our research is showing that when you have a chief deputy county auditor, for example, that they have the supervisory authority over all the employees in the auditor's department, just like the auditor. But then these other people who are being appointed deputy county auditor don't have any supervisory authority over anyone else. They only have supervisory authority over themselves. They're like, you know, they work and they report to the chief deputy and the county auditor. So what we're looking for is bona fide deputy auditor in a county would be the one who has a supervisory authority, just like the county auditor does. When you start appointing people who don't have supervisory authority, like the county auditor does, you're deviating from the statute, and then you're ending up, you know, appointing people who aren't bona fide deputy county auditors for the purpose of this statute. And so
on this, what you would ask then is to put this in a framework of the writ, you're arguing this is a clearly established violation of law, the appointments that were made. And you're arguing that the district court should direct counties and cities to appoint deputies according to, then this is my question, that what your reference to a bona fide deputy, for one, you look at a statute that relates to county deputies. For the other, you look to a dictionary definition. You seem to be arguing that a deputy has to be a pre-existing sort of second in command type person that's not appointed for purposes of the election cycle, right? And you're drawing all of that from, as I understand your argument, these have to be sort of powerful second in command type people who already have the jobs before the election cycle. Is that right?
Right, Judge Smith. So in statute section 348.08, that second sentence says, such deputies may sign all papers and do all of the things which county auditors may do. So one of the things that county auditors do is they supervise the staff. And so what I'm just following the language here is that for the purpose of 203B.121, when the state legislature used the phrase deputy auditor, that, and with respect to deputy county auditor, it meant deputies who sign all papers and do all the things which county auditors may do. And so there are people in the county auditor's office who handle, taxes, real estate documents, accounts payable, accounts receivable, and they only supervise themselves. And so when the reference in 348.08 would be, someone who, in the absence of the county auditor, that person, the deputy county auditor, can do everything the county auditor can do. And you're right, with respect to the cities, we don't have an analogous statute. We just have the dictionary definitions. But, it's a reasonable interpretation that, a deputy city clerk also has to do all of the things which county auditors may do. It wouldn't necessarily come down, the city clerks would do. It wouldn't necessarily come down to just, who the city clerk or the county auditor appoints. Now, the friction, of course.
One time, a deputy general counsel at the university, and I still was limited in what I could do by virtue of what my boss told me I could do. I mean, wouldn't that be true of all deputies? Is they don't have the full power of whoever they're serving as deputy to. It's dependent on what they're tasked with doing.
At least one, I'm just, based on my knowledge, there's at least one county chief deputy who has the authority that the auditor has. So the point here with respect to the word deputy, it's defined in 340.08, at least with respect to county deputy auditors. And so I think that's what we have to guide us by. Now the friction, Judge Smith, and I appreciate these very pointed questions. The friction is that, as you mentioned, so you don't have to exhaust the list. I'm not making that argument because we're arguing bona fide deputy county auditors can be appointed, without exhausting the list. But if the county auditor then appoints all the staff as deputy county auditors for the purpose of the election, then no one gets a point off the list. Now, the most direct interest here, as we argue for standing, is the Republican Party interest, because the Republican Party provides the names of some of the election judges, of course, on the list. The others are provided by other major political parties. So what's at stake is, what does the legislature want? Does the legislature want a mix of major political party identified judges with the deputy county auditor, or does the county have the power, the county auditor have the power just to appoint deputies in lieu of the major political party people on the list? And so it's an issue of administration. It's important to the Republican Party of Minnesota and Minnesota Voters Alliance, my clients. It's a legal issue. I think that it was presented in such a way under the mandamus statute that we satisfy those prerequisites. And then the court has to decide, basically, this, and with respect to, let's say, the counties in 348.08, what is there a limitation from 348.08 that applies to the county auditors when deputizing them for the purpose of appointing them to the absentee ballot board and the statute 203B.121? And so I think
so
that we
can you can I interrupt again? I'm sorry. Relative to standing, which I did want to turn to, I think your initial brief was filed before Minnesota Voter Alliance. Our decision came out, our published decision on February 1st in the rule challenge, in which we dismissed it for standing. How does that case affect your argument that the party has standing here? I mean, I recognize, it's a standing case, this is a mandamus, but it seems to me the same need for a specific injury. And there we decided that MVA and the Republican Party, I think, did not have what was required in the analogous standing requirement. How does that affect your argument here?
Based on my recollection, the Minnesota Voters Alliance was a party in those cases, not the Republican Party of Minnesota.
And then thank you.
And then also, based on my recollection, that was a Rule 14 rule challenge. It was a challenge of a rule, so sort of a declaratory judgment act that you can initiate in the Minnesota Court of Appeals when an agency adopts a rule. And so there were specific standing requirements regarding those types of challenges. Here we have a specific standing requirement based on the mandamus statute. And I think that the way that we presented it here, is distinguishable. At least I'd like to talk first about the Republican Party of Minnesota's interests, that the Republican Party of Minnesota's interests is identified by statute because they provide the names for the election judges as well as the other major political parties. So that's their interest. It's statutorily identified. And then the way that the county auditors the city clerk are handling it is that they don't get to have their interests played out. I mean, they basically, by appointing the staff, and there are people appointed off the election judge list. So that's a difference.
Wouldn't that interest be, that's why I was a little bit, wondering what the scope of your argument was, because let's say that for purposes of argument, instead only bona fide, in your view, only bona fide clerks are and deputies are appointed, but still no one off the list. What's the interest then? I mean, you don't seem to be arguing that exhaustion is, or in fact, you say you're not arguing that exhaustion is required. So it seems to me that's a separate, if it's not required, what's the interest of the party as long as they're bona fide deputies appointed?
Yeah, thank you, Judge. The question I think shifted just a little bit. And so then I need to clarify because I tried to answer the question earlier in the most straightforward way. So yes, we're not, the election judges list has to be exhausted before people who are not, deputy auditors, bona fide deputy auditors are appointed. So the bona fide deputy county auditors and deputy city clerks are appointed, the list has to be exhausted, then you can move on to other sources for election judges.
And so, okay, so that wraps back. When I had read your brief, I hadn't really seen you argue the exhaustion argument anymore. And that's why I was trying to understand. It seemed like the start of this, you were saying it just has to do with the bona fides of the appointments. But that's why I was trying to understand what you're saying about the election judges.
And the requirements. Oh, right. And I'm sorry for having failed in communicating effectively. But the point would be that, yeah, we want our people appointed, but we also recognize that bona fide deputy county auditors and city clerks can be appointed too. But then right now what's happening is more than bona fide deputy county auditors and deputy city clerks are being appointed. So no one's being appointed off the list. And so it's I think a legal issue that, well, at least we've tried to present to the court in a good way. These election administrative law questions are difficult. Everyone's trying to do their best. And so we're trying to gain clarity with respect to what the law is. Now, my client's position is the law is clear that the people off the people who are identified by the major political parties on the election judges list have to be used by the deputy or by the county auditors and city clerks. That's what they're for. And the response we're getting back is, well, we have the option just to appoint our staffs as deputy auditors and deputy clerks, so we don't need to use the list. So that's where the friction is. And the interest of the major political parties, including the Republican Party of Minnesota, is that they're putting the people on the list. And that's different than a general public interest because the state legislature gave them that right or power or privilege. Thank you.
Although your time has expired, if I could just pose a question, not for you to respond to now in light of your time, but I would appreciate it if you do choose to use some time for rebuttal, that you get at a point that is sticking in my mind, which is whether there's an adequate remedy at law as opposed to your mandamus action that would preclude your success on appeal. But if you could address that later, I would appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, seeing no other questions from the panel, we'll turn to counsel for respondent, Mr. Roach.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Robert Roach. I'm an assistant Ramsey County attorney, and I represent the Ramsey County respondents in this action. I'd like to begin by talking about the issue of jurisdiction and mootness. This case involves a request for mandamus asking the court to issue an order to the respondents directing them how to compose their ballot boards for the 2020 election. That election is over. The votes have all been counted. The winners have been certified and are now serving in their elected roles. So this is clearly a case where the court can no longer grant effective relief, and the case therefore meets the textbook definition.
Roche, isn't there an exception for mootness? I mean, we have elections every 2 years in America, at least the state and national, and cities have them there. And so, I mean, isn't this likely to come up again? And I mean, if that's the case, then why isn't this not moot?
It is not moot, Your Honor. I understand your question to refer to the exception for issues that are capable of repetition yet evading review. This case does not meet that exception for two reasons. First, it is simply not true, and the petitioners know that. As I understand their argument, the thrust of it is that the judicial process simply takes too long to resolve issues like this during an election cycle. The problem with that argument, Your Honor, is that one of the petitioners in this case, the Republican Party of Minnesota, filed an errors and omissions petition with the Minnesota Supreme Court during this election cycle challenging how Ramsey County was staffing election judges at the precinct level. It had to do with party balance, very similar issues to the issues raised here. That case was resolved on the merits within a week and within the election cycle. So the idea that there's no process that could resolve these issues timely is simply not true. Second,
well, let's assume, go ahead to your second point.
Thank you, Your Honor. Second, the petitioners have admitted that these issues are not capable of evading review in their reply brief. In their reply brief, they admit they have active district court cases against Lake County and Minneapolis that raise these issues of whether and when municipal employees may serve on ballot boards. So if this court does dismiss this case as moot, these issues will not evade judicial review.
But doesn't this argument, both of them, depend on there being another legal remedy? I mean, you're talking about the requirement that there be no other adequate legal remedy. Let's just assume for purposes of argument that there's not. We'll just assume that. Why would this mandamus action be moved?
Your Honor, the issue of adequate legal remedy and these other forms of judicial review obviously dovetail together. But our position is that the issue is moot, because there's no effective relief Your Honors can order with regards to the 2020 election. So the question then is, does the exception of capable of repetition yet evading review apply? And our position is that exception does not apply when I have listed three different cases. These are not hypotheticals, Your Honor. These are cases, one that has been decided by the Supreme Court of Minnesota, and two that are pending before district court. And my argument to the court is that those cases demonstrate that these issues are not capable of repetition yet evading review. They also
Those are under statutory difference. DAC actions or different
the
errors and omissions?
The Supreme Court action, I know that one because I was involved in it. That was an errors and omissions petition, a statutory action directly to the Minnesota Supreme Court. Petitioners describe the other cases, I believe, as quo warranto petitions in the district court. I only know about those because I read about them in petitioner's brief. So it is, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Can we turn, because I don't want to spend all your time
sure.
on this. Can we turn to the standing argument? What argument do you have that all of the appellants lack standing? What argument can you make to that does not depend on how we read the statutes? In other words, the merits decision of what the statutes require.
Our argument on the issue of standing and whether there's a peculiar harm to support mandamus really boils down to just a couple of points. And I think Judge Gilligan expressed this well in his decision. First, I want to talk about what the court has said. The court has said to have standing to get mandamus, a petitioner must show a harm that is direct, substantial, and peculiar, in that it differs markedly from the damage suffered by the public at large. The alleged harm here is that if the ballot boards are not properly staffed, then the election might not have been legally compliant and free and fair. I argue, Your Honor, that is an injury that is common to the public at large, to all Minnesotans. And as this court has held—
Mr. Roche, how do you respond though to what I think is Mr. Cardle's argument as well? You know, the other Minnesota voters case did not have the Republican Party as a party. And here, you know, the ballot boards are specifically supposed to have, for fairness, I suppose one side always gets to watch the other, you know, Republican Party members. It seems to me that makes their, you know, if the statute says they're supposed to be partisan members on these boards, and, you know, a partisan party is a member of this lawsuit, how would they, I mean, it seems to me that is different from the average voter. So why am I wrong?
I respectfully submit, Your Honor, that no political party has a greater interest in legally compliant and free and fair elections than the public at large. The candidates, the political parties and the voters all have the same legal interest. Obviously, the court is aware there have been dozens of lawsuits over this election across the country, and courts across the country have consistently held lack of standing where a candidate or a party is saying, our grievance is we think the election may not have been legal. under that line of cases, I submit that the Republican Party of Minnesota does not have a greater interest in legally compliant and free and fair elections in Minnesota than the public at large. And then according to this court's case law, if your interest is the same as the general public, that is legally insufficient for mandamus. And I would make the same argument about the members of the ballot board who said, well, we have a greater interest than the public and therefore we have standing to pursue mandamus.
What if the issue was county auditors are not appointing Republicans to any of these boards, period? Would they have standing then to challenge that?
I think that they would have an ability to file an E&O petition. I don't know that they would have standing under the mandamus statute, because the mandamus statute has that specific language that this court has articulated, that your harm must be different from that of the general public. So I think they would have standing, but not necessarily for mandamus. And what we're talking about in this case, Your Honor, is mandamus.
You're saying that the party would have standing under an errors and omissions action?
Yes. And I would point to the case that I litigated against the Republican Party of Minnesota that's cited in our brief. They had standing. That's exactly the hypothetical that Judge Connolly presented. That was the issue in the E&O petition that the Republican Party filed during this past election cycle. They were wrong and we won, but they had standing to pursue that claim on the merits before the Minnesota Supreme Court. I don't think they would have had standing for mandamus because they couldn't articulate a harm that was different than that of the general public. I'd like to turn.
I'm trying to figure out how this all fits together, because that was, you know, a standing question under a statutory cause of action. And you're saying, yes, I'm trying to figure out what's the difference between standing for a mandamus action and standing for a statutory cause of action, because again, we seem to bleed into, oh, there's another route, as opposed to focusing sort of on what an injury means for purposes either of standing or of the mandamus requirement.
And as I'm arguing this case, Your Honor, I honestly cannot recall what the standing requirement is for an errors and omissions petition. I don't have the statute in front of me. So I don't recall that, but I was trying to answer Judge Connolly's question. And I think that is an example where there was an ability to bring that challenge, but not as mandamus. Mandamus, I would argue, has a higher standard. You have to have that peculiar injury. And as the court has said, it can't be the same as the injury to the general public. And that is our argument on that. With the court's permission, I'd like to address the argument as to whether deputies are election judges, because that's a big part of petitioner's brief. That argument fails for three reasons. First, under the governing statute, which is section 203B.121, the legislature has clearly stated that there are two different categories of people who may serve on ballot boards. The first category consists of election judges, and the statute lays out specific requirements that apply to election judges in terms of partisanship, declaration, and party balance. The second category consists of deputy auditors and clerks, and the statute contains no language imposing those same requirements on deputies. These two distinct categories are not interchangeable, as petitioners assert. We know this because throughout the statute, the legislature distinguishes between election judges specifically and members of the ballot boards generally. If, as petitioners suggest, all members of the ballot board are election judges, then this different language in the statutory structure becomes meaningless. And as the court knows, there is a presumption in Minnesota law that different statutory language has different meaning. So the language.
Is it the respondent's position then, I assume, that the governing body could have zero election judges if they chose?
Yes, it is, Your Honor. And that gets to the question of what is a sufficient number of election judges. And our argument, Your Honor, is that the term sufficient is not defined in statute, and it must be defined, therefore, according to its ordinary meaning. And to say sufficient, you have to look at the context. What goal is going to be accomplished? Here, that goal is the processing and counting of absentee ballots. So a sufficient number would mean enough to do that. In some communities and in some elections with low absentee ballot rates, a sufficient number of election judges could be zero. We're aware, Your Honor, that in the Minnesota Voters Alliance administrative challenge, the Secretary of State, the Chief Elections Officer, for the state stated that position in its brief to this court, that the sufficient number can be zero. Therefore, it could hypothetically be zero.
Because it's zero because others are appointed as deputies?
If there are enough deputies to do the job without needing election judges, yes. And as I mentioned, that is consistent with what the Secretary of State has said. It's also consistent with what Judge Gilligan said below.
But couldn't a governing body always make there be enough deputies by just hiring deputies to do it? And then always saying there's no matter your size, let's just make it all deputies.
I suppose theoretically, but I don't believe there's any evidence or allegations that happened in this case. And this is a mandamus action, not a declaratory judgment action. So the question is, have petitioners shown a violation of a clear legal duty with evidence in this case?
But was Olmsted County, when the litigation started, were there zero election judges on it?
I would have to defer to Olmsted County on that, Your Honor. I'm sorry, I don't know.
Okay. Let me ask this, apropos of the argument of the different language used. Counsel for appellant's brief points out that in part of 203B.121 and under the duties, there is a specific duty assigned to election judges by name to compare the signatures provided. How do you respond to that use of election judges in that subdivision and a specific duty assigned to them if they don't need to be appointed at all?
Your Honor, I would respond because the legislature has stated that the deputy county auditors may perform those functions as members of the ballot board, that the legislature did contemplate a scenario where you can have both, or you could have all election judges or all deputy county auditors. I would also respond by saying the law, in order for mandamus to issue, the law has to be so clear that it cannot admit any reasonable controversy or debate. In this case, although it could be arguable, it is not so crystal clear in petitioner's direction that mandamus should have issued. I would argue that the fact that the lower court, a reasonable judge of this state, concluded that the statute does allow for the possibility of all deputies shows that it is not crystal clear that it's prohibited and therefore mandamus should not issue. I'd like to just respond briefly to the concept of bona fide deputy county auditors. This argument fails for four reasons, Your Honor. First, here they're trying to change the law. The term bona fide does not appear in Minnesota election law. They're asking the court to issue mandamus not based on a clear legal standard in election law. They've made up this term and are saying we don't meet their subjective definition of it. Second, they're trying to shift the burden of proof, saying the petitioners have not proven that the judges are bona fide, but they have the burden of proof, not the petitioners. Third, although we didn't bear the burden of proof, we did affirmatively demonstrate our judges are bona fide. And fourth, as Judge Gilligan concluded, this case is about deputies on ballot boards. And the only requirement for those deputies in the statute is that they receive training in handling and processing absentee ballots. There is no evidence and no allegations. May I finish my sentence, Your Honors? There is no evidence and no allegations in this case that any of the deputies failed to receive that training that is spelled out in the statute. Therefore, the deputies were bona fide. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. And I'm just going to, if the panel doesn't mind, I'm going to ask Ms. Platt, could you just speak to the Olmsted County Board and its composition at the start of this litigation and then what happened with it briefly?
I can. Actually, what happened was that on July 21st, the Olmsted County Board of Commissioners created or established the ballot board pursuant to statute. It appointed 21 individuals to serve on the ballot board, and of those 21 individuals, 18 of them were also appointed to be or serve as election judges. So the board was actually comprised of individuals who had been appointed as election judges. And then the remaining three who were on the board's resolution of July 21st were actually people who were full-time Olmsted County employees who already were existing deputy county auditors, to use the language that the appellants are using. However, our factual situation is unique to the extent that we don't have an office of the county auditor in Olmsted County. So we fall under the definition in the election law wherein the term county auditor as used throughout the election law means the individual who has been delegated that authority in counties where that office has been abolished. And that was accomplished in 1998 through a special act of the Minnesota legislature.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. Seeing no other questions, we'll turn to Mr. Cardell for a rebuttal. Click your mute button if you would.
With respect to just quickly addressing these arguments regarding, you know, who gets to appoint or not, our principal concern is the staff, but also a lot of the staff then are seasonal election workers, and they're getting appointed deputies as well. So the hypothetical would be, you know, could you, rather than exhaust the party list, hire someone off the street as a seasonal election worker, appoint them as a deputy, and put them on the absentee ballot board? And so that's what's happening. And so it's not just staff members, it's also people who are hired temporarily. And you know, in these other cases, it is true that the Secretary of State, the Ramsey County District Court, Ramsey County, Olmsted County, Lake County, and Minneapolis are all aligned with this policy that we don't have to address or appoint people off this list. But that doesn't mean what they're doing is legal. That just means that a lot of people have lined up to take this position. It's the court's responsibility.
Well, let me ask this, Mr. Cardell. Is it fair to say that this record shows that there were election judges on each of the ballot boards of each of these respondents?
Yes, that the people who are trained as election judges, yes.
Okay, and so there were election judges, and you're not making an argument that there was not balance among them, among the election judges, is that right?
Well, they weren't taken off the list, right? That's our argument, right? They're not exhausting the party list. They're going to these other people and appointing them instead.
And that's so your argument comes down to they had to first exhaust even though they did have election judges, and by this I'm distinguishing between people who signed up to be election judges and served as election judges, as opposed to then being members of the ballot board. So you agree that there were election judges on each of the ballot boards. Your complaint is the deputies who weren't also election judges. Like you conflate those two, or you say they have to at least go through all of the election judges before they appoint deputies. And those deputies have to be something specific in your view, right?
Right. Our position is that the election judges have to come off the list, and that of course, you know, a bona fide deputy county auditor or deputy city clerk can be appointed. But when you get into the seasonal workers and the staff, then yeah, I mean, that's deviates from the statutory intent. With regard to the Judge Ross's question, I want to make sure that I get to it. Is there an adequate remedy at law? You know, the errors and omissions statute that was raised, you know, that's a statutory procedure. And my understanding of it, and I can send the court an opinion, I didn't cite it in the brief, is that it's only for the upcoming election in the sense of a specific election, and that it doesn't cover general election administration questions. And when I saw that in an early case, maybe 15 years ago, I got the direction from the Minnesota Supreme Court that no, you don't want to bring general election law administration questions before the Minnesota Supreme Court, you should start the district court. So the Arizona Omissions Statute is not intended to deal with general election administration law questions. And the Minnesota Supreme Court does not want to be dealing with these things in the first instance. Now, if there's a question about how a particular ballot is printed or how a particular candidate is being treated or something like that, that's the Arizona Omissions Statute. But to incorporate every election law administrative issue and say you should go to the Minnesota Supreme Court first, I don't think anyone intends that. Now, if it were the case that you could, it still wouldn't be mutually exclusive. I think mandamus would be the appropriate approach for a fact-intensive situation like we may have here. We haven't had discovery yet, but I think if we do the, if we have an opportunity for discovery, we'll show that a lot of these absentee ballot board members end up being seasonal election workers. They're not, either their staff or their seasonal election workers, and they're being displacing the Republicans and Democrats and other major political party people.
Mr. Cardle, I'm not sure I fully comprehend the argument in your brief as to why a DEC action is not an adequate remedy at law.
There are many decisions of the Court of Appeals and of the U.S. District Court, and the Eighth Circuit decision, in the case that I was involved in, sadly my client lost, but in those decisions, the Declaratory Judgment Act has been interpreted, and here the state of Minnesota and cities and counties have won on the argument that the Declaratory Judgment Act does not provide a private cause of action to sue. The Declaratory Judgment Act is properly understood as a remedial remedy for situations where harm is going to occur. For example, in a breach of contract, or if there's a property interest or business interest involved, you know, a breach of a license or permit condition. And so the Declaratory Judgment Act does not provide a private cause of action as confirmed by many opinions, including the Eichenberger decision in the U.S. Court of Appeals. Correlated to that is this idea that the Minnesota Constitution doesn't provide a private cause of action. What you have to find is a private cause of action in a statute or in the common law, because that's how Minnesota waives sovereign immunity to allow its citizens to sue. And that's where I ended up with the writ of mandamus statute, chapter 586, because the state of Minnesota has waived sovereign immunity. So plaintiffs like mine can sue if they have an interest at stake, a beneficial interest, to get the government to perform a duty that's impairing that right. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no other questions, thank you, counsel, for your arguments and your briefing. The case is submitted. We'll have a decision out in a statutory time period.